Hello and welcome to The Silver King's War. I'm Michael Sievers, the writer, producer, and creator of this podcast series about my father's Second World War as a B-26 bombardier. Today, we are in Marauder Men, which is the second play in a four-play series. And this is Act 2, The Greenhouse, and Scene 8, entitled Serviceman. And it begins with Michael, Stanley's son, who is the narrator. Stanley, now a decorated first lieutenant, learns in a letter from his mother that he is the Temple Emmanuel serviceman cover story in the March-April 1945 edition. Stanley is livid about this story. Now 22 and a Marauder man, he struggles to balance his success with the loss of fellow flyers throughout his A-72 life. His unease reveals that the B-26 crew he trained and flew with in Shreveport, Louisiana, had been shot down in late February 1945. The crew, led by pilot Jack Festy and co-pilot Jim Fombie Jr., were MIA, missing in action. Our hero's move to lead bombardier for a six-ship flight meant that his former crew went down with a different man riding in the greenhouse. This scene has Stanley and John Sherry sitting at a table in the base officers' club beneath one light beam, drinking, smoking, and discussing serviceman. Michael reads from the serviceman story. He begins, headline, Lieutenant Silverfield wins air medal, cluster, also promotion. The lead bombardier of a six-ship flight, Lieutenant Stanley L. Silverfield, has been decorated twice and promoted in rank during the past 6 weeks. Raised in rank from second to first lieutenant, he has also been awarded the Air Medal and Oak Leaf Cluster. When we last heard from Stanley, he had completed 36 missions from an airbase somewhere in France. Lieutenant Silverfield, who is a bombardier navigator, entered the service in January 1943 and went overseas in September of 44. He has seen active combat ever since leaving the country. In letters to his parents, Stanley has been fulsome in his praise of the Red Cross. He says the workers are like angels from heaven, and no one in the States can possibly imagine all the good they do. Lieutenant Silverfield and Technical Sergeant Arthur Phillips, Jr. met by chance in a village in France. It was the first time in 3 years the two Emmanuelites had seen each other. They had tried to contact each other as they knew they had the same APO number, but had never been able to get together. The reunion resulted in a good old-fashioned Birmingham Bull session. In his most recent letter, Stanley says he is working harder than ever, but that his morale is higher than ever, as things really look good over there. Michael reads from a letter that his father wrote on May 1st, 1945, from Venlo, Holland, where his unit had recently moved, and it's just days before the end of the war in Europe. Dearest ones, since writing last, there hasn't been any new development of which I can write. All of us are still sweating out the end of the war and waiting anxiously for good news. Unfortunately, the rumor of an unconditional surrender hasn't borne fruit. I was afraid it was too good to be true, but I simply can't understand what forces the enemy to continue to resist. They must truly be ignorant of the situation, and it's causing me, for one, very impatient days. I suppose I possess the same feelings as a man who is about to become a father, never knowing when the great event might happen. I do feel terribly lonesome today. This morning, two of the fellows left to return to the States. They had been my roommates since the first day of my arrival here. One was my ex-pilot, and the other was the assistant operations officer, of whom I have previously written you about. We had become so attached during the many months, I feel sort of lost without them. They were two swell fellows and as good a friend as anyone could possibly want. But they deserved to go home after being here 14 months. Both were captains, too. In one of your letters, you asked for information concerning the whereabouts of Fombi. I had no idea his father would write to you, and I didn't want to write you about it. But since you know now, I can give you the whole story. If you will take a look at my crew picture taken while at Barksdale, the boys with me are the ones in question. Upon arrival here, I was replaced by someone else for various reasons. Then one day the boys failed to return from a mission. No one knows exactly what happened to them, whether they are dead or prisoners of war. That's why they are listed as missing in action. I can't give you any more information, for that's all we ever know. If they were taken as prisoners of war, their parents will be the first to know. I suggest when you write that you say nothing about this. Tell them you know of nothing more than what his father wrote, as most assuredly you don't want to build up what might be a false hope. I received no mail the last few days, so I don't know if you're still in Chicago or what your plans are. Anyhow, I'm sure this will be forwarded to you in any event. I'm anxiously awaiting to hear all the details about your visit. A request. Please send me an assortment of foodstuffs with stationery and stamps. I'm fine and thinking of you constantly, hoping you're well. Love to Ida. I love you and I miss you. Stan. As the lights go up on this scene, Stanley and JJ are in the officers' club and they're smoking and drinking a couple of beers. And our hero, the king, is angry. He begins, "Damn it, JJ, this story is difficult to see. I'm no different than any other man in this war. We've trained to do this job. Yes, we're alive. I'm no hero." And JJ Sherry, "Well, king, you are a big man to the folks in Alabama. I imagine your parents thought this story would help the congregation see their boys becoming men." And the king, angry, very angry. "That may be true, but why didn't they ask me if this was appropriate?" And JJ, "Well, these are your parents, king. When did they ask you permission to do anything? They still see a callow kid getting on a train to Nashville 2 years ago." Stanley, "Those days are long gone, JJ. I was 19. I'm 22 today. Yet these years have been so intense. It feels more like a decade of difference. I'm a man now." JJ, the king's war buddy, "I agree. And if we make it home, your arrival as a uniformed officer will deliver that powerful message. We are very different men now." And the king, "And yes, ironically, I wrote my folks a letter on May 1 to explain a difficult situation." Now, Sherry, looking concerned and asking, "What situation, king?" Stanley's terse response, "Mother got a letter from Jim Fombi's father asking if she had any news about his son. Of course, the guys went down. They're MIA. What exactly was I supposed to say?" And JJ, concerned now, "Really, how did his folks find your folks? And what did your mother tell Mr. Fombi about the situation?" The king, "That's not clear. Perhaps he used our Barksdale B-26 crew photo and searched to try to contact every family. Maybe he wrote every one of those folks a letter." And JJ, "King, this is getting a little more interesting. It's really not clear what the Air Corps brass would provide him." And Stanley, "Obviously, he hasn't heard from Jim Jr. So Jim Sr., his dad, is worried, and I don't blame him. I get it, but mother doesn't know anything, and I hope that's what she told him." And now JJ is trying to steer the subject just a little bit. He inquires, "Have you shared your promotions within the squadron with your family, the good news?" And the king, ever humble, "Well, indirectly through my oak leaf cluster numbers, but otherwise, no." And JJ, "Stanley, you mean she has no idea how crews change through rotation, loss, personalities, and differences?" The king, "The May 1 letter that I wrote explained that I was replaced in my crew when we reached A-72, and that one day the boys who I trained with at Barksdale went out on a mission and didn't come home." Sherry, still concerned, "King, that was mid-February. It's now May." And the king, "Yes, while my letter traveled to them, the serviceman issue was in our mail queue. And then I wrote my response and explained my shame." As the lights go down on this scene, Michael will read a remarkable letter his father wrote on May 14th of 1945 from Germany. "Dearest ones, I haven't heard from you for a few days, but I'm not complaining. I haven't written as often as I should, so I can't expect to receive. Now that the hostilities have ceased, I'm hoping you're not expecting me to write as regularly as before. The situation hasn't changed since my last letter. Consequently, I can't give you any news. You're probably very anxious to know what will happen to me now, and I assure you, I'm just as anxious as you, but your guess is as good as mine. One of three things can carve my immediate future. I can become part of the Army of Occupation. I can go direct to the Pacific. Or I can be sent home. All my hopes are based on the latter, and I shall be greatly disappointed if one of the others becomes true. So, my advice to you is to be patient, as you have been thus far. Remember, everything happens for the best. After VE Day, we were given a 3-day holiday, during which time I visited that part of Germany which had caused us so much hell during the hostilities, the Ruhr Valley. I visited Essen and Dusseldorf, all big industrial centers. I was very anxious to see just what the Allied air power had done, and I was very satisfied with the results. All the cities have been reduced to rubble, the same as I had described of Koblenz, only worse. It's evident that air power was the deciding factor. They were crippled in every means of manufacturing besides the entire city being leveled. But now that it's all over, the people have come out of hiding and are moving back into what is left of the city. Already, they are shoveling and attempting to clear the rubble from the streets. Men, women, and children can be seen working with just their bare hands, removing the debris. Of course, it's easy to see how the army has drained the families. Only the very old and very young are left. And I never saw so many children between the ages of 1 and 5. It's remarkable the way Hitler had his people producing. You can almost look at them and see another war in 20 years. And I'm not kidding. The Germans are industrious people. I saw that with my own eyes. This country is the closest comparison to the States I've seen yet. They are so far ahead of the French, it is pathetic. As one intelligence officer put it, "If I would return here in 2 years, I wouldn't believe there had been a war." Perhaps this is giving them too much credit, but I find it not hard to believe. The farmer and his fields are intact, never having been touched by the war. And as you know, the farmer is the backbone of a nation. There is beautiful farmland with every inch utilized. Honestly, as you travel along the highway, it makes you homesick. It's so much like the States. Of course, it will be a hard winter for most of Germany, especially for the people in cities because of the food shortage, and that will be due to the lack of transportation. But I suppose Uncle Sam will feed them as usual. I only hope that this time the peace terms will be adhered to. If not, God help us 20 years from now. I received the temple serviceman with my face plastered all over it, and I've never been so disgusted in all my life. I'm absolutely ashamed of myself, and thank God I'm not there to face the people, because the embarrassment would be more than I can bear. Why you ever did such a thing, I shall never know. I simply can't understand you. Surely you must have known better than to consent to such notoriety. I'm not a hero. I haven't done any more than the next man. When I saw that, I was so ashamed I couldn't even show it to my buddies. I almost feel like writing the rabbi and asking him to retract the ridiculous article. But what's done is done and can't be undone. It seems to me that you would have asked my permission, since I didn't agree with the last article written about me. And this time you can't say it wasn't your fault, as I know you're the only ones that have my picture. Thanks, Dad, for your very sweet letter on my birthday. I just wish you would write more often. No more news for now. Oh, yes, I received a birthday card in quarterly from FIEP. Do you know how they got my address? My love to Cece and Ida. Keep well. I love and miss you. Stan. This is the end of Scene 8, Serviceman, and the end of the second play, Marauder Men. And you are listening to The Silver King's War.